John Cole Scott, founder of the Active Investment Company Alliance, is here, and he's going to answer some of your questions, but he's also going to discuss why just because something is discounted doesn't actually mean it's cheap. This is The Navigator. Welcome to The Navigator, where we talk about all-weather active investing and plotting a course to financial success with the help of closed-end funds. The Navigator is brought to you by the Active Investment Company Alliance, a unique industry organization that represents all facets of the closed-end fund industry, from users and investors to fund sponsors and creators. If you're looking for excellence beyond indexing, the Navigator will point you in the right direction. Joining me today, it's John Cole Scott, who not only runs the Active Investment Company Alliance, but who is Chief Investment Officer at Closed End Fund Advisors in Richmond, Virginia, which has helpful research tools online that you can use at cefdata.com. You can learn more about the firm at cefadvisors.com and about the Alliance at aicalliance.org. And oh, by the way, you can follow John on Twitter at John Cole Scott. John, great to have you back on The Navigator.
It's always good to be here, Chuck.
We have a couple of really good questions that I want to get to. But first, I want to talk about something that fits right in with the holiday season and holiday shopping. We all love bargains, but you've got some research that shows that not everything that's on sale in the closed-end fund space, not every discount that's big means that every fund is cheap.
Absolutely. So, I mean, what we find is sometimes people just sift the universe by discount only, and they don't do two other factors that I've been doing for most of my career. You have to look at the relative range of the individual fund. So is a 20 discount relatively high for its experience, or is it relatively low? Also, if it's in a peer group, as many funds are, with numerous other options to choose from, is it in the upper echelons of pricing or the lower? And so we talk about comparable and relative discounts and premiums in addition to just absolute discounts. And again, sometimes when we're fishing, we'll find a small premium is comparably cheap and relatively cheap and sometimes very useful for our clients. So we have a bunch of indices, and just for perspective, they can go to cefdata.com/index and check out our premium index and our discount index, because what we found, just as a driver of this belief, is that the net asset value performance is best for the premium index, but the market price performance is best for the discount index, and really helps encapsulate that theory that we use.
What that means for an investor is you shouldn't just look at a discount and go, wow, look at how big the discount is. You should be trying to come up with a relative value. It makes it difficult, I guess, in times like these, because we saw discounts get so widened when the market was tanking early in the year that you could say, well, okay, I'm buying something now at a 10 discount, but oh, by the way, it was at a 20 discount just a few months ago. So is it really still that cheap?
Absolutely. And so at the end of the quarter, so we're beyond that, but I wrote some commentary for our clients, and we have a deep discount history now in CF Data, and I was basically able to tell them that discounts are far narrower than earlier this year because things feel a lot brighter and the future seems more certain. However, it's still only been wider than the current level 6 times. And so we're up a little bit from there, but like a point. You know, and I don't know the future, and you should have some discount because we're not all vaccinated. The economy hasn't fully recovered, but I find often people price more pain into the market than is sometimes realized. And then often, remember, with closed-end funds, you're in more than one sector, you're generally using more than one fund, and so you've got diversification.
Well, now let's get to the questions from the audience. Our first question today comes from Ray in Buena Vista, Florida, and he writes, "Hi, Chuck. I didn't know much about closed-end funds until I started listening to your show. I still don't, but I love The Navigator. I haven't bought any closed-end funds yet, but I think I will in 2021. My question is, do I consider closed-end funds an alternative investment, or do I consider them whatever kind of investments they buy, or are they both? Is there a reason, if I already own a municipal bond fund, to go out and buy a municipal bond closed-end fund?"
Think about munis. I would say, and you've heard me speak, that the muni closed-end fund is probably the most perfect version of it. The manager is active. Sometimes the guts can be very, the underlying holdings, very illiquid, very cheap leverage. And so they can offer yields on an investment-grade-oriented portfolio like a junk-rated portfolio. But with a closed-end fund, you have to be able to handle the discount movements and the extra volatility. So I'd say if you remove the volatility, it's the same guts. You're over the same NAV over time. But how an investor like your listener could use close-end funds would be when things felt wider, overweight the close-end funds. When things felt narrower or more frothy a little bit, underweight the close-end fund. And we don't use any open-end funds, but a lot of investors like them. They could rotate that way. And so the guts of a close-end fund like BDCs or CLOs or some of the interesting funds you've had on the show are alternatives because of the investments. I would just say that close-end funds are an alternative to an open-end fund in a tactical way for many investors, whether through their advisor or themselves.
It's not necessarily that closed-end funds are a separate asset class. It's really a different way to buy the same assets and different tactics within the assets.
Absolutely. And you have to remember, the net asset value is one part of the equation. You have to get a handle on the closed-end fundedness, which is like the board, the institutional investment base, the leverage cost, the expense ratio, their governance. Are they good to shareholders? Do they do dilutive rights offerings, or they give you, you know, a stable dividend that they manage prudently over time? There's a lot of different experiences from different sponsors that investors need to pay attention that's separate from the actual net asset value outcomes.
Well, now let's move to our second question, which is a little bit related and similar. This comes from Peter in Pink Hill, North Carolina, who says, I like dividend paying stocks and I like the looks of a few closed end funds, like the Dividend Achievers funds from BlackRock. With traditional mutual funds, I know you shouldn't own more than two or three funds that do the same thing. But does that apply to closed-end funds? I'd think I want to capture the discounts, so I might want to buy different funds at different times. But if all that does is make performance mushy and like the index, then no. So how many closed-end funds should I want to buy in any one type of asset? And does it matter if I have a few traditional funds and then a closed-end fund that buys the same things?
Ties in great to the last question. And so imagine, just think about dividend equity funds as a bucket. There's more than one sponsor than BlackRock. You know, Eaton Vance has funds amongst others. And so going back to it, to our firm, we tend to build a portfolio of around 12 to 14 sectors, 2 to 3 funds per sector. Again, sometimes the sector only gets one vote because it's a small allocation, but that's normal for us. Remember, what's important is like this tax loss selling season. So let's say you own a dividend close-end fund and you have a loss on it for some reason, or a gain, and you need to capture that result. You can pick often the same manager, similar fund, and hold it for 31 days. So I would say too many, he's right, you're indexing yourself. I think you need a bit of look at your portfolio and understand what's going on if you're managing it. Otherwise, there are indices that track the sector that you can just buy and forget, or there's products from folks like us and others that you can buy and forget. So I think it's a great question, and it's good to have 1, 2, 3, but like I regularly will see a portfolio for a prospective client with 5 funds from the same sponsor in the same sector, and it's just I have to scratch my head and go, why? What's the alpha there?
Well, and even if it's not 5 from the same sponsor, but it's 5 in the same sector. With traditional mutual funds, there's plenty of research that says if you own 4 large cap growth funds, you effectively have what they call a closet index fund. In other words, you're paying active management prices, but the funds combine to give you nothing better than an expensive index fund performance.
Agreed. And so, I mean, oftentimes, I mean, closed-end funds had a lot of success for international funds in the 90s. That's not the huge focus now, but often we're trying to get that non-U.S. equity exposure. We'll kind of use a ratio based on the needs of the portfolio between the Aberdeen Global Emerging Market Fund and the Franklin Templeton Global Emerging Market Fund. They are fundamentally different managers, but we're splitting the trade in some sort of ratio between 2 ticker symbols, Chuck, not 5, not 6. And again, if one underperforms, we can maybe do some tax loss selling, or let's say we have so many losses from earlier this year, we could take the one that's maybe at a gain. So it gives you choices, but I think you have to look at your portfolio and be able to handle the management of owning what you have. Like, we don't understand why people own less than 1 or 2% of an investment, because it could be a home run or a POS, and it's not going to help or hurt your future, in my opinion. I mean, that's the way I see it.
John, great stuff as always. Thanks so much for joining us.
Always great to be here, Chuck. We'll talk soon, I'm sure.
The Navigator is a joint production of the Active Investment Company Alliance and Money Life with Chuck Jaffe. I am Chuck Jaffe. You can learn more about my work and my show at moneylifeshow.com. To learn more about closed-end funds and business development companies, go to AICAlliance.org, the website for the Active Investment Company Alliance. They're on Facebook and LinkedIn at AIC Alliance. And if you have questions about closed-end funds, send them to thenavigator@AICAlliance.org. Thanks to my guest, John Cole Scott, Chief Investment Officer at Closed End Fund Advisors in Richmond, Virginia, the founder and executive chairman of the AICA. The firm's online at cefadvisors.com and cefdata.com, and he's on Twitter at John Cole Scott. The Navigator podcast is available every Friday. Please subscribe on your favorite podcast app and join us again next week. Until then, stay safe, everybody.